Clay Noonan in for Rowan Anna on 720 WGN at 6:30. We're going to give you a chance to go see Diamond Live featuring Steve Richard. So be listening for that. We have a lot to get to. But right now, big decision coming out of a Texas grand jury deciding that the sheriff's officials and the jailers have not committed any crimes in the death of Sandra Bland. Right now, her attorney, Cannon Lambert, and her sister, Sharon Cooper, join me on 720 WGN. We're getting them there. So we'll be talking to them. One of the special prosecutors has said he's been trying to get a hold of the family. So we're going to ask the attorney, Mr. Lambert, if that's the case, if they're going to talk to the special prosecutor. Now, we know the grand jury testimony is private, and they're not allowed to disclose evidence that was used in the grand jury. But, of course, that's not keeping the family from wondering what happened in that jail cell. Did, you know, the death of Sandra Bland was ruled a suicide. Her family is saying that couldn't possibly happen. She would not have killed herself. We did have, again, we go back to video. We have dash cam video of the traffic stop. We hear the officer threaten to, quote, light her up when she wouldn't get out of the car. We see video footage of her going into her jail cell. But then we don't really know what happened. And that's the crux of it. The medical examiner said that it was suicide. So a wrongful death suit has been filed. They are going to bring back the individual officer. And the grand jury is going to look into maybe charging him. According to the special prosecutor down there, all charges are under consideration. That's a quote from the Tribune today. So they will be looking into that and weighing the evidence to see what's going on with her. This is a little of what the audio in Texas worked. So this is a little bit of what happened during the traffic stop with Sandra Bland.
Get out of the car.
Get out of the car now.
Why am I being apprehended? You're trying to give me a ticket.
I said get out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended?
You just opened my car door. I'm going to drag you out of here.
So you're threatening to drag me out of my own car.
Get out of the car.
And then you
I will light you up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
All right, that's part of that was the initial stop. Then, as I said, we did see video of Sandra Bland being taken into her cell. The attorney for Sandra Bland's family, Cannon Lambert, joins us now on 720 WGN. Mr. Lambert, thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you for having me.
So what is the family's reaction to the decision by the grand jury that the sheriff's officials and the jailers have no criminal culpability in this case?
Well, you know, and I should say I'm sitting here with Ms. Sharon Cooper, who is the family spokesperson, along with Ms. Geneva Reed-Beal, Sandy's mom. And I'll tell you that we're not altogether at all surprised by what the outcome was, just by virtue of the fact that when you've got a grand jury, all it is an arm of the prosecutor. Mm-hmm. They get to control what evidence gets submitted. They get to cherry pick what evidence they submit and what evidence they hold back. They're the only ones that are there. The evidence that they submit and the testimony they submit is sealed and is secretive. And so we're in a spot where, frankly, we don't even have an opportunity to be present. And we're made to be in a place where we have to accept what it is that the outcome is. And that's in the face of knowing that when they say you can indict a ham sandwich, it's because the prosecutor, when they want an indictment, they get it. And when they don't want one, they don't.
Now, one of the special prosecutors has been quoted as saying that his quote was, "I'm begging to meet with them." Have you heard from Daryl Jordan? Has he reached out to you and the family and said, "Listen, I'd love to sit down and talk to you about what went on"?
You know, I will be very, very candid with you. I think that it's a shame that he's so comfortable parting ways with the truth. The reality is that as soon as he was initially appointed as a special prosecutor, that was the only time that he reached out to us. He was en route to a family gathering in Indianapolis while we and the family were in Houston. He called me and asked if he could meet us the next day, and I told him that we were going to be in Houston that day, so we could definitely meet with him, but we'd have to do so on a different day. I never again, ever again, heard from him. Am I fully aware of that, so too is he. He and I had an exchange, and he made clear that he was uncomfortable denying that reality. He knows he can't deny that reality because not only was I present, but so too was the family. And we've always maintained that the people that care most about whether or not criminal charges would be brought is this family. And so the notion that somehow they would come to a final conclusion as to whether or not there would be an indictment without having spoken to the family is beyond me. It's disappointing. And frankly speaking, it's consistent with the type of thing that this family has been seeing continually.
Now, they're saying that there's the grand jury could reconvene or is going to reconvene and look at charges against the individual officer. Do you have any faith that that outcome will be any different than the outcome the grand jury had this time?
You know, it's shocking to me that they're saying they need another 2 months to look at video that's been around for 5 months already. All you need is 52 minutes to look at the video. And in that 52 minutes, it's painfully clear that the officer's conduct was woefully short of what his responsibilities to citizenry were. He stopped her unnecessarily. He made her get out of the car without any probable cause. He pointed a taser at her and said, "I'm going to light you up," unnecessarily. He continued to escalate the situation. He made a false arrest, and then he falsified his reporting to his superiors when he told them he tried to de-escalate when he's caught on tape now. He's caught on tape escalating the situation. There's nothing to investigate. His conduct is on tape.
Cannon Lambert is the attorney for Sandra Bland's family. Sandra's sister, Sharon Cooper, is on the line as well. Ms. Cooper, what does the family think happened?
This is the thing, we don't know. And the reason that we don't know is because we haven't been given access to the very evidence that we've asked for. What we do know is from the time that Sandy encountered Officer Insignia at the traffic stop and through her detainment, something bad happened to her, and that's what we're trying to figure out, because it was a routine traffic stop that ended in a fatal incident.
Now, and I hate to be in a position where it's perceived that someone is blaming a victim. It's a horrible loss of your sister. Some people will say, well, why didn't she just get out of the car to begin with? Mr. Lambert, do you want to, because the Supreme Court says in a traffic stop, the police are in control, whether we like it or not.
Well, there's no question about the fact that when there's an instance where an officer's safety is at risk, then they have the opportunity and right to ask you to exit your vehicle. There's no question about that. But where there is zero basis for you to ask, and let's be clear, he asked her to put out a cigarette, and because she said, right, why do I have to do that? That's when he said, well, now you can get out of the car, opened her door. That was unlawful. He had not placed her under arrest. In fact, the first time that the term arrest came up is when Sandy said, no, you don't have the right to do that. I'm not under arrest. And then only after she said that, he said to her, you are under arrest. She said, for what? For what? For not putting out a threat? I mean, the reality of it is that even though officers have responsibilities to the public and to themselves and have to be careful in what they do because their jobs are dangerous, they shouldn't be dangerous to those who they're supposed to be serving and protecting.
Cannon Lambert is my guest. He is the attorney for Sandra Bland's family. Sandra Bland's mother is with us as well, and her sister, Sharon Cooper. If you guys can hold on one moment, we'll take a quick break and we'll find out what's next with the wrongful death lawsuit and all of that, as the grand jury has made one decision in Texas, and we're waiting to see if they will convene to try to make a second decision. We'll do all that. Brian Noonan in for Ro and Anna on WGN, talking about the grand jury decision in Texas not to indict any of the sheriff's officials or the jailers in relation to the death of Sandra Bland. They have said there's nothing in this case that shows anything other than the fact that Ms. Bland committed suicide. Her family's attorney, Cannon Lambert Sr., is with us, as is her mother, Geneva Reed Veal, and her sister, Sharon Cooper. Everybody's on the line. Thank you for holding on. Let me ask you, Ms. Reed Veal, a question. First of all, I'm very sorry for your loss. But secondly, did the family know that Sandra had been arrested and that she was in jail?
No, sir.
No. So was she... Did they keep her from contacting anybody, or was that her decision to not contact the family?
No, it wasn't a decision. She made what I think is a reasonable overture. When she was first arrested on Friday night, she made calls to people she knew locally Friday okay. night. On Saturday, she called the family, and on Saturday afternoon, there was contact made, and they began their efforts to get her out.
Okay.
And on Sunday, when Sunday evening, they had come to a place where they were ready to get her out and thought they had to do so on Monday morning, but were told that she was no longer there.
And forgive me if this is uncomfortable, but I know people are wondering about this. Did Sandra have a history of depression? Was there anything in her past that may have indicated that she could, in fact, have decided to take her own life?
The family didn't know about anything like that. But what we do know is that in the event that you as a jailer have someone in your custody and there are two documents in your possession that are diametrically opposed from one another, you have an affirmative obligation to at least ferret out which of the two circumstances is actually accurate so that you know whether or not you need to do more. They didn't do that.
Brian, I'd like to
go back to your question really quickly about the point about, you know, some people will say, should she have just put out her cigarette and got out of her vehicle? And one of the things that I want to stress to your listeners is that if you have rights and you relinquish those rights voluntarily without cause, then you are not in a position to enjoy those rights. And conversely, what that also means is that the minute that Sandra was taken into the custody by Officer Encinia, he usurped her decision-making capability, which means that she was in turn in the care and custody of the Waller County Sheriff's Department. So for that very reason, it is their responsibility to see to it that she is taken care of while in their custody and care so that she can make it out and go about her business less than 72 hours after she was detained.
And is that the crux of the wrongful death suit, that they had custody of Sandra and they should have done a better job of protecting her?
Well, you know, number one, we know that there are a host of things that they did and that they overlooked. We know that, for example, the condition of the jail cell was such that it begs the question, why? Why would you have not one bag, but several bags in the jail cell,
right,
particularly when you're isolating a person, putting them in a jail cell that's meant for five people, and instead you only have one person in that cell. And when you know, for example, that based on what they claim, that she was despondent and was extremely sad and downtrodden. If you know that, and if you have documentation that shows that documentation is diametrically opposed, and you know that she's not eating and she's crying, then you have certain obligations. And we're saying that in an in-custody death, you should at the very least meet your obligations, and some of the obligations that they set for themselves, they failed and they fell short of.
Mr. Lambert, let's go back because you've mentioned it a couple times. And for those who aren't clear, what are the two documents that were diametrically opposed, as you say?
Sure. There is a booking document that was initially generated at the time that she was first brought into the jail. And there are questions on that that are completed and suggest in one area that she had attempted suicide. And then several hours later, there are documents that are that illustrate that she responded to the contrary. So you can't say, yes, I tried suicide, and no, I didn't try suicide in my lifetime, and both of them be true. And so it's the responsibility, and it's a simple thing to do. Wait a minute, you said that you did before. Right. So why did you say that? Which of them is true? And then you go back and you correct which of the two is not accurate. You know, but they didn't do that.
Well, it's it's a horrible case. And again, my sympathies, Ms. Reed-Veal and Ms. Cooper, for your loss. And we'll be, what do you think happens now? So you've filed the wrongful death suit. What's the next step?
Brian, I appreciate, this is Sharon Cooper, I appreciate that you asked that question because I think it's imperative for the general public to understand that while the grand jury decision was disheartening and disappointing, it doesn't negate the fact that we're still going to move forward with the civil lawsuit. One of the things that we are looking towards is that the opposing party in this case has actually utilized the criminal investigation to block us from getting very basic information. This transpired approximately 5 months ago, and we still don't have the very basic police report that would entail all of the events that occurred at the stop leading up to Sandy's detainment. The opposing parties have not disclosed that information to us. We are also eagerly looking to get our hands on the Texas Rangers report. They are the entity that has been responsible for fully and thoroughly investigating this matter, in their opinion. And so we're looking to see if that full investigation has been done. And in that report, it would identify witnesses that have talked to that have provided summations of what purported to happen in the jail. Also, we're looking to see if they took Sandy's body temp when they discovered her expired to identify if there was any rigor mortis activity, any brainwave activity. Those are things that any family going through a situation such as this are entitled to.
All right. Well, Sharon Cooper, Geneva Reed-Veal, and Cannon Lambert Sr., I appreciate your time this afternoon and you sharing your story. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Take care. All right. Our news in 2 minutes here on 720 WGN.